Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, March the 5th. And thanks again for showing us such outstanding support during our just concluded pledge drive. I pledge to work as hard as you did in raising the $775,000 that you helped us raise to pay for the programming that you receive from Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll talk more about the pledge drive, which ended Saturday night when Phil Corriveau, Wisconsin Public Radio's director, joins me for his monthly visit with you after 8 o'clock this morning. But this hour, we hope you'll grab a cup of coffee and wipe the sleep out of your eyes if you got any sleep in there last night, and join us as we talk about why so many of us don't get enough sleep. Do you have trouble getting a full 8 hours of sleep? Do you consider it a problem or no big deal? Well, sleep deprivation is a big deal, according to our guest this hour, who joins us at the start of National Sleep Awareness Week. Our guest is the director of a Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders, and she knows a lot about what stops many of us from getting enough Z's. She is the author of a book on, as well, recently published on teen sleep habits. What do you do to get the sleep you need? Do you have any tips for the rest of us, or are you too struggling with this problem? Need some expert advice? Well, call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, please use 263-1890. You can also send us an email, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Dr. Helene Emselem. She is an associate professor of neurology at George Washington University, director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders, and author of Snooze or Lose, 10 No-War Ways to Improve Your Teen Sleep Habits. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I happen to know, I don't have any teens, but I have some nieces and nephews who are teenagers, and they seem to be vampires. They stay up all night, and if they could, would sleep all day.
And in many ways, that is exactly what they are designed to do. There are true changes in the brain during puberty that shift the timing of sleep that do make them into night owls.
Yeah, and the problem is they can't sleep all day with school.
Not even close to the amount of sleep that we project they need. Teenagers need 9.25 hours of sleep a night.
9.25 hours, okay.
Absolutely. More sleep than adults. We think of them as adults, but this process of puberty that they're engaged in has a huge sleep requirement associated with it and true changes in sleep.
Yeah, and it says here that some 41 million teens in the U.S. are struggling with this.
Very much so. We have school start times for high schools averaging around 7:30 in the morning across the country. And because these teens are vampires, as you put it, and their brains won't allow them to fall asleep, even with good parenting where we set bedtimes and lights out times to turn off the electronics, we still have teens who can't fall asleep before 11 o'clock at night and need to get up at 6 to get out to the bus stop.
Well, we'll talk more on what parents might do with their teenagers with this, but this is a problem that adults as well face, not getting enough sleep.
Absolutely.
How big of a problem is it?
Well, it's estimated that 9% of the population has chronic insomnia, but transient insomnia is a very, very common problem. And the National Sleep Foundation for Sleep Awareness Week this week has just released a poll on sleep in women, suggesting that more than half of women say they don't get a good night's sleep.
Oh, really? So why would there be differences, do you think, between men and women?
We've wondered about that for a very long time. Women report insomnia a little more frequently than men do, although it is still a common problem in men as well.
Yeah. Some hormonal things with women, I understand. Well, I'm in my 40s, and I know that I can have less restful sleep these days than I used to.
Absolutely. There are changes with the menstrual cycle. There are changes perimenopausally, postmenopausally. Mm-hmm. So there's an ongoing dynamic challenge to sleep with our hormones.
Yeah. Well, you know, our teens don't get enough sleep. Women don't get enough sleep. Men have a problem with this. Is it really that big of a deal? We're a little tired. So what?
Well, we're designed to sleep. Sleep serves a spectacular restorative function for the body, not just physically restorative so that you can wake up not feeling achy and tired, but mentally restorative. We learn during sleep. We take all of the information from the day that we've been exposed to and lay it down into memories so that information is available to us. Whether it's learning the routine that you learned in your aerobics class, when you got up too early to exercise,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Or whether it's the information you learned in math class that day. And so sleep is a vital, intrinsic part of who we are. And there isn't a pill that'll make the sleep need go away.
Yeah. I would guess that I typically get maybe 7 hours of sleep a night. I feel like that's enough, is it?
For adults, 7 to 9 hours is thought to be the normal range. There are many lucky people who only need 7 hours of sleep a night, and as long as you're allocating enough time mm-hmm. to sleep in that range, you're usually doing fine. There's some people who think that some people can get away with 6.5 hours, but most people need a minimum of 7.
We are talking about sleep disorders, sleep problems, problems in not getting a good night's sleep, and we welcome your questions and maybe your experiences. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Our guest is Dr. Helene Emsellem. She is director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders in Chevy Chase, Maryland. She is also an associate professor of neurology at George Washington University and author of the recently published Snooze or Lose, 10 No-War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habits. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, March the 5th. And coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Coverage of the Great Decision series will continue after 5 o'clock as Ben and his guest will discuss the politics and the economy of Central Asia. That's this afternoon after 5 o'clock. We're talking about sleeping this hour. It is the start of National Sleep Awareness Week, which is organized by the National Sleep Foundation. Various activities going on this week and news conferences, and we are talking with a guest who knows a lot about why so many of us have problems getting a good night's sleep, talking about how we might reclaim some of those lost Z's. 1-800-642-1234 is our toll-free number if you would like to join in with a question or a thought about this. Are you all sleeping? Our lines are open. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Dr. Helene Emsellem is director of a Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders. She's an associate professor of neurology. She's the author of Snooze or Lose, 10 No-War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habit, though we can talk about adult sleep habits as well during this hour. We did get a caller who wanted to know, didn't want to wait, but wanted to know, why is it that we start school when we start schools with the kids having such problems, Dr. Emsellem? Should we start school later than we do?
We should absolutely start school later than we do. It's about 15 years ago that many school districts switched the high schools to an earlier start time. Traditionally, 20 years ago, high school started at 9 o'clock in the morning. The switch was made to save money on busing and for a variety of other reasons, and the full science of teen sleep wasn't available to us at the time. There weren't teen sleep experts who were out there with a lot of data to consult. No one thought it made a difference, and it seemed to make the system work well. What we know now is that it does make a difference, and it seems to make an even bigger difference now to have the schools start so early and the kids more sleep-deprived. And I think part of that is our 24/7 culture. 15 years ago, you just didn't have that many distractions after 11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of kids today do have computers and TVs and music in their rooms, which I presume could keep them up, too.
It does. Mm. In fact, last year's Sleep in America poll was on teen sleep, and the association between 4 electronic devices in your bedroom and a lack of sleep and poor grades was very tight.
Here's another suggestion from that same caller. We should give our kids something physical to do. Back when this caller was growing up, growing up on a farm apparently, everyone was working hard and we all slept well.
Well, I think that's correct. And 100 years ago, people slept more than an hour more than they do now. So there was a lot more sleep. Physical activity is helpful. But you have to think about it. If a teen needs 9.25 hours of sleep a night and they can't fall asleep before 11 and have to get up at 6, you know, in a lot of ways, when we're asking them to sit in first period class, it's still 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning in their brain. It's hard to get up and run, jog down the block, and do those things when you're so far out of sync. And I think any first period teacher in a high school system can testify to how many kids in their class are zoned.
Yeah. You know, I noticed that the Sleep Foundation has a special focus this year with National Sleep Awareness Week, and the slogan was something along the lines of, sleep is as important as diet and exercise, only it's easier. Well, I guess it's not easier for all of us, but it is very important. It's important for our health, as important as diet and exercise.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's some fantastic information of scientifically acquired data about the relationship between obesity and lack of sleep. We have an obesity epidemic in this country that not only affects adults, but affects children and teens. A serious problem with very long-term health consequences. And when we have insufficient sleep, we have impaired leptin metabolism at a cellular level. Our body can't handle the food we eat. And although intuitively you'd think that if you stay up an extra hour, you're just burning another hour's worth of calories, in fact, when we stay up that extra hour, we're impairing our ability to manage the calories we've already eaten. We're much more likely to weigh in heavier next week.
Yeah, so sleep more and maybe lose weight.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. also a very tight relationship between sleep and mood, particularly in our teenagers.
Yeah. Now we have full lines. Let me take some callers. Melissa in Appleton, good morning.
Good morning.
Did you get enough sleep last night?
No, I was actually up at 3:30 this morning.
Oh.
I guess I'm wondering, my husband and I both seem to have the same issue. I believe it's probably stress-related, but where we periodically just wake up, and that was my case this morning, where our mind is racing with lists of items, of things to do, and what, I guess, suggestions would your caller or your expert today have for those types of sleep problems?
Mm-hmm. Those are real tough ones. When you get up at between 3 and 5 in the morning, it's very hard to recover from that. If your mind is running off lists in the middle of the night, then I think it's real important to allocate at least a half an hour of time as a wind down between the craziness of the day and trying to go to sleep. We don't always have a culture of taking a little wind down time. After dinner, sit down and make a list of everything you have to do. I call this flushing to paper. Get it somewhere safe so that little lobe in your brain isn't up at night bugging you, trying to be mm-hmm. sure you don't forget it when you first wake up. Take a warm bath before you go to sleep. Do some stretching exercises. Try to just transition gently into sleep. Yoga has been shown to promote sleep and improve slow-wave, deep sleep. So trying to spend a little bit of time transitioning your brain from wake to sleep and taking those worries and putting them on paper where they're a little safer.
Thank you. Those are great. I usually do my list making in the morning, so maybe I'll have to switch to nighttime.
Thank you, Melissa, and take a yoga class. It's fun. Judy in Germantown. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, everyone. My question is regarding the snooze alarm. I have teenagers who use that for about an hour before they actually get up, I try to push that their uninterrupted sleep hour is much more important that I'll get up in 10 minutes type of syndrome that they're into. Am I correct?
Completely. I'm with you 100% on not liking the snooze alarm. I think that focusing them on preparing themselves the night before, laying out their clothes, getting their books ready, so everything is in a stack where they can just grab it and run for it in the morning so that they're not worrying, getting up, thinking about a few things, and trying to go back to sleep. We're doing REM sleep in those early morning hours, and it's very restorative to their psyche. Keeping that hour will keep them much more pleasant for you in the morning.
Yeah, remind us what REM sleep is.
Rapid eye movement sleep is not only where we dream, but we believe it's a very important stage of sleep where we're laying down memories, sorting out things, and restoring our psyche. It's our REM sleep that leaves us calm, happy, enjoyable people to be with.
Thank you, Judy. Kent in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Kent.
Hello, good morning.
Morning.
I'm a 50-year-old man. I've had Parkinson's diagnosed for about 10 years now.
Oh.
And the last few years I've had a lot of problems with sleep, and my neurologist has suggested that it's due to Parkinson's that can cause a lot of sleeping problems. And I'm just curious if you're familiar with any particular techniques that might help Parkinson's people who are having sleep difficulties due to that.
The Parkinson's process itself does interfere with intrinsic sleep mechanisms. So there are overlaps between Parkinson's disease and the incidence of restlessness in the legs and limb movements at night. There's some disruptions of rapid eye movement sleep where one might not be paralyzed as well during REM sleep, so one can't interact and be as consciously aware of dreams and gets more restored sleep. And there's a higher incidence of obstructive sleep apnea. Talking to your doc about it, sometimes using your Parkinson's medications, if your doc will prescribe it at bedtime, will promote sleep. And often, if sleep is problematic for you, it is a good reason to seek a consultation with a sleep specialist because there are so many overlaps. Often, a night in a sleep lab is required to sort out just what problem is bugging you.
Kent, thank you so much for the call, and good luck to you. What about medications for those of us without a Parkinson's or a medical condition? Is that recommended to get sleep? Sleep aids?
Well, with the Parkinson's, there are specific drugs that treat the disorder.
Right.
The use of sleep aids to help you get to sleep is something that we do on occasion. Sometimes the occasional use of a sleep aid is important to break a cycle before we entrain a poor cycle. But data shows that cognitive behavioral therapy, where we adjust our behaviors, which is the most challenging thing we have to do in life, is every bit as effective and may have better long-term efficacy. So what I like to say is the judicious use of a sleep aid may be reasonable at times, particularly if your problem has lasted more than 2 to 3 weeks and it looks like it's becoming a chronic problem.
Let's hold it here, and we'll talk more about how we can get a good night's sleep after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Monday morning, March the 5th. And thanks to all of you who contributed to Wisconsin Public Radio during our winter membership drive, which ended on Saturday night. You donated more than $775,000 to help support the programming that you depend on. The programming that you're listening to right now. More than 5,200 members pledged, and of those, 1,560 brand new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. Welcome and thank you. We're talking about sleep and sleep problems and how we can get a good night's sleep, talking on the occasion of the National Sleep Awareness Week, which starts today. organized by the National Sleep Foundation. And we welcome your questions for our guest expert at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. And we have an open line now for you in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Do you have a problem getting a full 8 hours of sleep each night? We welcome your questions for our guest. She is a nationally known sleep expert. She is the director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders in Chevy Chase, Maryland, where she runs an 11-bed sleep laboratory. Dr. Helene Emsalem has been featured as a sleep expert on a number of national television programs, including Larry King Live. She has been widely quoted in national magazines and newspapers, including The Washington Post and Scientific American. She is an associate professor of neurology at George Washington University, and she's the author of Snooze or Lose, 10 No War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habits. And again, if you have a question for her on the effects of sleep deprivation or how you can get a better good night's sleep, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. And we did get an email from Dean in Madison who wants to know, can you catch up on sleep? Does that work?
You can catch up on sleep. You just have to sleep to catch up on what you missed. There isn't any magic formula. There isn't a 10-to-1 ratio. We believe that there probably is very close to a 1-to-1 ratio for what you missed and what you have to pay back. So it does take time to catch up on sleep. Some aspects of that are important, too, and that is when you try to catch up. When you sleep in late on the weekends, and this is particularly relevant to our teens who are so exhausted by the end of the school week, when we allow them to sleep in late, as good parents, we can see that they're totally exhausted. It also resets our clocks later and makes it harder to fall asleep the next night when we sleep in very late the next day. So catching up a little bit at a time is the best way. Not getting the sleep debt to start with is the optimal way.
Yeah. My nephew, who's a student here at UW-Madison, my sister called him yesterday afternoon to see if he'd want to meet us for a very late lunch, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but he was sleeping.
Yes, and he has the advantage of arranging his class schedule so that he doesn't have a 7:30 class to get to. So a lot of our teens, I think the college culture camp on campus is to go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. My daughter, who's a senior at Muhlenberg, often will do her classes that are in the mid-morning, come back, and take a two-hour nap. So she lives on a European siesta schedule.
Having a nap is a good thing.
Having a nap may be a good thing.
Maybe a good thing, as long as it's a short nap and not a 5-hour nap.
Right, and napping between 2 and 5 for 40 minutes, if we really need it, is a great pickup of some sleep time that we might have missed. Napping at from 5 to 7 may interfere with our ability to fall asleep that night and leave us short shrifted that night.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I don't take naps. Is that when I'm tired enough that I want a nap, I know that I'll do just that. I'll sleep until 9 o'clock at night, and then I won't be able to get back to sleep.
Yeah, it's a big problem. Keeping the balance from the front end is always the best idea, and getting enough sleep each night as best you can.
Yeah, Joanne in New Berlin is with us now. Hi, Joanne. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and Dr. Helene. I'm the mother of a young doctor who survived the medical residency program, during which interns have only maybe 2 nights a week of fairly decent sleep and often work 30 hours without sleep. I'm wondering, in her position, would Dr. Helene be in a place to try and influence, to lobby the committee who makes the rules that require these long hours? It comes at a time when they're studying and they should be cementing what they learned during the night and having restorative sleep that helps them during the day.
You're absolutely right, and doctors have finally turned their looking glass on themselves. There is the legislation that has been passed, and hospitals with residency training programs are being supervised, and there are now a clear set of rules about how many hours an intern and resident may work per week to protect all of our health. Errors and mistakes are made by doctors even when they're trying to do good when they haven't had enough sleep. And if she's still being asked to work 30-hour shifts and more than 60-hour weeks, she needs to check with the local regulations and talk to her hospital about that. Residents are now not supposed to be exposed to those kinds of work hours.
Yeah, and our guest is Dr. Helene Emsellem, and you can ask her a question if you'd like to at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Certainly, we don't want our doctors and medical students making errors due to sleep deprivation, as that's certainly a matter of life or death, but the rest of us with sleep deprivation can also make some very serious mistakes, can't we, doctor?
Absolutely. Driving is a perfect example. You know, when we're sleep deprived, our whole body revs up to try to compensate for it. Our immune system revs up, and we are very buffered against falling completely over asleep. We can just keep going. The deficits in how we function are as great when we're on only 6 hours of sleep as 4 hours of sleep in a recent study that was done. So we can keep pushing through but functioning very poorly. Get behind the wheel of a car where it's quiet and monotonous and one can experience the sleep debt one has and fall asleep. And inattention for just a moment is enough to cause a fatality.
Yeah. In fact, I thought I saw some, I don't know if it was a study or a report that said that driving sleepy is can be as bad as driving drunk.
Absolutely. We just don't have good mechanisms to track who was driving sleepy. There's been a fair amount of attention paid to this, and now, after an accident, police officers in many jurisdictions are required to ask how much sleep one has had. And there's in New Jersey, there's Maggie's Law, where it is a criminal act to drive on insufficient sleep, and you can be prosecuted for homicide, if vehicular homicide, if you have hurt someone by driving with insufficient sleep.
We're going to check our weather forecast and then two more calls for Dr. Helene Emsellem. She is an associate professor of neurology at George Washington University, the director of a Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders there, and she is also author of the recently published book, Snooze or Lose, 10 No War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habits. So we're talking about sleep problems in teens as well as adults, as we are, I don't know if celebrating is the right word, but at least noting that this is National Sleep Awareness Week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 14 minutes before 7 o'clock, coming up after 7, from the State of the Tribes to the State of Milwaukee, it's our State Capitol Report coming up. We will talk with Wisconsin Public Radio's State Government Reporter, Sean Johnson, and others about what's brewing under the State Capitol Dome these days. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. We are talking this hour about National Sleep Week with Dr. Helene Emsellem. She is a sleep expert and author of the book Snooze or Lose, 10 No War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habits. And while we aren't just talking about our teen sleep habits, what's one of those no war ways that we can improve our teen sleep habits, doctor?
To set a good example is a very, very important one and relevant on Sleep Awareness Week. To set a culture in the household where sleep is respected and we're not short-shrifting ourselves and sending mixed messages to our teens is very important. And always talking about it in the evening rather than in the morning when they're half asleep and often very, very grouchy. You can also send your listeners to snoozeorlose.com, where lots of these ideas are laid out on our website, so people can use that as a resource as well.
Yeah, are you saying that the teens are only grouchy at night?
No. They're a little less grouchy at night, actually. Mm-hmm. If you talk to them after dinner, you might be able to have a coherent conversation about how to manage their sleep-wake patterns. In the book, my daughter wrote a chapter of it with sort of tips for teens on how to survive without your parents knowing that you actually manage the problem and are paying attention to it. And lots and lots of good ideas and good tips there.
Now, you think that we sometimes just dismiss this grouchy teen as a rite of passage when that grouchiness probably is due to sleep deprivation.
Often it's a huge contributing factor. You know, mood disorders in our teenagers are an enormous problem. Suicide is one of the top three causes of the loss of life in this age group. And mood is very negatively affected by insufficient sleep. And you just have to think about if someone was in your bedroom, well, you may be early because of the radio show.
Yeah.
But for those of us who get up at 6 or 7, somebody in your room at 4 a.m. every day yelling, you got to get up, you got to get up.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what you're going to say to them. Teens can be fun when they're well-rested and bright and energetic and very interesting on an adequate amount of sleep.
I am very fortunate. I don't have children, but my husband and I are both on the exact same schedule. I kind of adjusted my schedule to his. We both get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, but that means we're both in bed at about 6 o'clock at night, too. Renee in Ashland, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was just wondering if you could discuss some of the effects of long-term sleep loss, and besides trying to get more sleep, what are some other things we can do? I'm a young mother, and you know, just through the pregnancy and nursing, you know, I haven't had a full night of sleep in almost a year, and you know, no end in sight. And obviously, I can't have caffeine, which I know a lot of people turn to. Try to take naps when I can, but that's not always possible. Are there other things we can look towards before we can actually sleep our normal amount?
Yeah, and I can hear what's keeping you busy in the background.
Yes, I better go. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Lots and lots to do. Probably, you know, it's a tough time in life with lots of responsibilities. Doing your best to share those responsibilities and divide them up with your significant other whenever possible is important. It's an important parenting role for men to get involved with these things, too. If you have a little bit older kids, having them help make their lunches and engage in the process. Trying to catch a nap for you is very, very important. And I think be grateful that you can't take the caffeine, because for the people who are drinking caffeine, there's a direct correlation with even less sleep at night and a very vicious cycle. So although it's a tough time, you have to set limits on what you say yes to. And what you think you can do, be sure that you're putting your kids down for a nap and find a safe way to take a nap yourself as well.
Boy, yeah, it sounds like this has been going on for quite a while for Renee, too. What are the effects of really long-term sleep deprivation like that?
Not good. Besides an overall depression in mood and difficulty with weight control, there are increased risks of diabetes, heart disease, hypertension associated just with insufficient sleep. So obesity at the top of the list. But many, many negative health consequences. It's not unusual for me to see this situation in the office, and you just have to stop and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in bed at this time. And I'd encourage everyone to take the Great American Sleep Challenge on the Sleep Foundation website, which is sleepfoundation.org. Track how much sleep you're getting, and then sit down and look at your schedule and try to carve a little more time.
Yeah, good idea. And we started the program talking about this survey released in observance of the week this week on women and sleep, and you mentioned that 50% of women say that they have some sort of sleeping problems. I'm wondering if this is one of the reasons why the women are the ones who maybe are up all night with the babies and that sort of thing.
Often women take on these things and keep saying yes to them.
Mm-hmm.
Sharing these burdens, having the bed partner give the 2 a.m. bottle to the very little baby is an important thing. Making lunches is something everybody can do. And helping out with the general household chores. That poll shows that women are often doing household chores right before they go to sleep, when we should be doing a wind-down time.
Thanks, Renee, and good luck to you. Jeffrey in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy and Dr. Emsilin. My question was actually two, but when I first started my working career after high school, I had to work third shift for many years, and I had the distinct feeling that that may have had a permanent impression on my sleep pattern that has been off, with a tendency for me to want to stay up late. And after I started had enough seniority to work first shift, to get up early. So, you know, I was still staying up late, but getting up early to get this to work on time. So could you answer that question for me?
Well, many of us have a very strong internal clock, and if you were able to work that third shift, which really makes some of us fall completely over, you probably have a little bit of night owl in your blood. There's genetic loading for some of us to be night owls. This is a good thing because there are jobs that have to be done during the night. When you switch back to days, the most important thing is to reinforce light in the morning and give yourself a wind down and get those lights out at night so that you've got that 8-hour period of lights out. In order to break the tendency, you've got to reinforce the wake-up time not only on your work days but on your weekend days as well. And that entrains the new rhythm for your brain. It sounds like you're still kind of half in and half out of your night schedule.
Okay. The other question I wanted to ask was, have there been any studies relevant to connecting watching TV before going to bed with an adverse effect on the sleep cycle?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, the TV is designed to keep us engaged. And I think all of us have had the experience of not being able to turn off a sitcom when we know exactly what's going to happen next. Often the TV has a chock full of heart-wrenching, upsetting information that gets us revved up rather than calmed down. I'm a big fan of MP3 players. Make yourself a soothing playlist. Turn off the TV well before bedtime and listen to some soft music. Read a little bit, do a Sudoku or a crossword puzzle is a better wind down.
Thank you, Jeffrey. David in Mondovi, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a registered nurse. I work for any given week, say evening shift, come back 8 hours later, work a day shift, and then work 2 12-hour overnights, and then maybe an evening. Question number one, I've only done this for 2 years. Will I become adjusted to this so that I can sleep on command without being constantly tired? And two, what do you think of using something like Ambien or one of those products to try to knock myself out for 8 hours when I have to get some sleep?
Brutal job. We need you as a nurse out there. Politic against a shifting schedule that shifts that quickly. It takes about 10 days to fully adjust your internal clock to a new schedule. You're never adjusted. You're always going to be exhausted. If necessary, look for a new job. That's a killer schedule. And if you're sleeping on command, it's only because you are absolutely, totally exhausted, which is not a safe way to do your job. Rotating shifts at 3-week intervals with several days in between for people to phase adjust is important. The Ambien, none of the hypnotics will put you to sleep outside your own internal clock's circadian window for sleep. So your brain has an idea when it wants you to sleep. Trying to sleep outside that time is very difficult, even drug-induced.
Yeah. Boy, I'm tired just listening to your schedule, David. Good luck to you. Gary in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. A couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with a severe sleep apnea. Went in partially because I was just without energy. I would get in a good night's sleep, and I was just exhausted. I just didn't feel like doing anything. So I started the machine, and after 6 months, I still didn't feel any better, and I went back in. Not only did I do a sleep test, but I did a nap test from 6 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, 2-hour intervals. I had a good night's sleep, and every sleep or nap test, every 2 hours, I fell asleep within an average of 5 minutes. It's been about a year and a half now since that last nap test, and I still don't feel any kind of energy. I'm on my third neurologist, and they're still not sure why I feel so exhausted. And I'm getting now between 8 to 9 hours of sleep every night. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions as to what else I can try?
Sleep apnea is a significant medical problem with breathing problems at night. And what happens when you have severe apnea over a long period of time is you're under-oxygenating your brain. In some people, the cumulative sleepiness doesn't resolve when we correct the underlying problem. still very important for you to use your CPAP device. But if you have a subtle, what we call hypoxic, not enough oxygen injury to your brain, your alertness may be impaired, and it should be treated. So if you've done that NAP study and it's as abnormal as you report, then see a sleep specialist and let's treat it. There are medications FDA approved for treating sleepiness associated with sleep apnea.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, and lots more people with questions, sorry to say. For more information, Dr. M. Salem, do you have a website?
The website is snoozeorlose.com with lots of great suggestions for you and for your team.
All right. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Dr. Helene M. Salem is the director of the Center for Sleep and Wake Disorders in Chevy Chase, Maryland, and associate professor of neurology at George Washington University. She is the author of Snooze or Lose, 10 No-War Ways to Improve Your Teen's Sleep Habits. Talking with us today, the start of National Sleep Awareness Week. We thank Leo Duran and Keisha Mabra for producing this hour, and thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.